You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 297 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, again, for ever so often we have our guy on, Freak Base. He's doing his annual Funksgiving show in Cincinnati. Friday the 29th, Southgate House Revival. We'll talk a little more about that later, but more to the point, huge Reds fan, does the theme music for our podcast. Welcome back.
Oh, so good to be back with you. Thank you so much for having me on. Of course, I listen to you every week and read you all the time on Twitter, and it's always an honor to be on here, and love what you guys are doing at Red Leg Nation, so I appreciate it.
Oh, we love having you on, and it's always good conversation because it's a lot of music talk with you, but I know that we enjoy talking about the Reds, and also you like to educate me on maybe the comic book movie universe. And
I was going to say, I thought this was a Joker sound podcast tonight. What are we doing here?
I forgot to mention to you before we went on the air, but I did have a note here that I wanted to talk to you about that Joker movie because I know we have some thoughts. So
yes.
Let's talk about the Reds first. Of course, some news this week. All of us had been really excited for the free agency period to begin because the Reds are rumored to be attempting to be very active. And today, the Cincinnati Reds were not able to get it done with catcher Yasmani Grandal, who signed a 4-year, $73 million deal with the Chicago White Sox. And, of course, you know, everybody starts freaking out because the Reds couldn't get their guy. And I agree. I think that Grandal was the Reds' number one target this offseason for a reason. Great catcher.
Yeah.
Probably the best available catcher, certainly the best available free agent catcher. And I do have, I do have some information that the Reds really did make they tried to go pretty hard after Grandal, but were unable to get it done. How disappointed are you that the Reds were unable to make that happen?
Yeah, it was a shot in the heart. Like, as I mentioned when we started on the show, you know, how I read you a lot, and I was just flipping through my Twitter feed about whatever 3 or 4 o'clock this afternoon, whatever time it was, the news broke, and, you know, saw the big press release that you retweeted from the Chicago White Sox about that. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I wouldn't say I thought that was a give me thing, you know, I mean, nothing's give me in baseball anymore, but, I don't know. I thought there'd at least be a little more drama leading up to who he ended up signing with, whether he did sign up with the Reds or not. I was just surprised. It was just kind of like, whoa, it just kind of came out of nowhere. And like, with that kind of long-term deal, you would think that there were some talks in the works for a little bit at least. So, yeah, it's a shame. You know, it's still very early, obviously, in the off season. So, and just the idea of him coming back to the team that he started with, there's some like nice little poetic justice to that, at least in my mind. So, it is what it is. So I guess they got to time to move on, you know, to the next prospect or whatever that may be.
I think I agree with you in that in a couple of ways. Number one, I thought that if the Reds were really going to get a free agent, an impact free agent this year, I thought Yasmani Grandal was absolutely the most likely chip to fall in that scenario. And because he made so much sense for the Reds, they, you know, to upgrade a catcher would be, he's the best available player, maybe the best available free agent not named Anthony Rendon. We could probably argue about that, but I for some reason I had in my mind, and because I had been hearing that the Reds were really active in trying to acquire him, so I was kind of feeling like they might be able to get him. And you know, the thing about it is that it takes two to tango, as they say. You know, the Reds could have made a really good offer and just couldn't get it done. I mean, you know, Grandal could have preferred the American League for many reasons. Could have preferred the White Sox for many reasons. Maybe he just liked Chicago better than Cincinnati. Maybe he likes the idea that he could play designated hitter. It's not necessarily the Reds. I don't want to – everyone – not everyone, but a lot of people tend to, you know, sort of slag the Reds front office when they're unable to do one of these, make one of these deals. And I'm pretty not upset, but I'm frustrated that the Reds weren't able to get this done again. But I don't know that it's necessarily because they weren't really in the mix. I think they probably were. It's just, what are you going to do? You can't make Grandal go where he doesn't want to go, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's going to be interesting now. Obviously, you know, Grandal was the number one guy that everybody was talking about. Now it's going to be interesting to see, you know, at least in my mind, the person you think of next is another, obviously, alumni from our farm system is Didi Gregorius, is where he's going to end up going, you know, hopefully here. It seems like, at least from my mind, it seems like a really good fit. But I'm wondering how, you know, far those talks are along, whether it be here or someone else too, is right now. It's interesting that this stuff is happening all before the winter meetings too, as well. So people seem to be moving fast in this off season so far.
Yeah, that's something else you said that I really agreed with, which is that, you know, I did not expect Grandal to be the first chip to fall in the free agency game this year. I thought we'd have a little bit more time to discuss and analyze, but he really, you know, they got it done quickly. And so you wonder if that caught the Reds off guard a little bit. I can't imagine that it did, because they have identified him. Yeah. So now what do they do? Does it create more urgency to go after Didi Gregorius or, you know, someone else? I mean, they're going to have to upgrade somewhere. There aren't that many free agent catchers available still out there that would really be an impact. So you got shortstop, you got second base if you can, you have, you know, anywhere in the outfield, really, you could try to upgrade. So, but the available free agent outfielders and free agent middle infielders are pretty slim pickings this year. Didi Gregorius, to me, it feels like the Reds will have to sort of double down their efforts. I think he's probably their next big target. And again, it'll be interesting to see how much urgency they have to get something done, given the fact they have this kind of sort of high profile failure, quote unquote.
Sure.
With Grandal.
Yeah. Well, and then with, you know, not that this dictates anything, but, it, you know, it seems like they, not always, but it's always with Reds Fest just around the corner, like having a little kind of splash, you know, press item to go in there with, you know, i.e. Didi Gregorius or, you know, what we were hoping would have been a Grandal. It'd be something that you think that they can, they would like to, that'd be a nice thing to kind of unveil, you know, what is that next, a couple weekends away from now, if it can happen.
Yeah, we're 10 days away, less than 10 days at this point. You're right, that's a good point. Wouldn't it be fun to introduce Didi Gregorius or whoever, but introduce them at Reds Fest. So, I don't know. I guess we move on, but it's just really kind of a...
So, Chad, you know, and if I'm naive on this, I apologize. Obviously, we know Tucker's going to be here regardless, but did the Reds re-sign Kirk Casale too as well? I wasn't sure about that.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to check. I'm pretty sure, yeah, he's still under Reds team control. I think I believe he's arbitration eligible.
Right.
So I'm going to look that up right here while we're talking, but
okay.
And that's a question, which is, what if the Reds are unable to acquire any other catchers this year? Do they go with Barnhart and Kirk Casale's still arbitration eligible. So he's still under team control.
Okay.
So, you know, they could go back into the season with Barnhart and Casale, who are not, you know, we keep talking about upgrading catcher. That's not the worst tandem.
No, not at all. And when they were both, you know, both healthy, that rotation, especially that little peak run they ran, I guess it was kind of mid-May of last year, mm-hmm. you know, that was a nice little run between the two of them, the way that that they had a little kind of nice thing happening there for a few weeks there before. I think Casale was the first one that got injured, if I remember right. But so I mean, it's not, you know, top of the line, but it's definitely something that's, you know, workable if and of course the big if they upgrade to make up for it in other places, obviously.
Right. Yeah. You have to upgrade elsewhere. And that's the only way that makes much sense to go with those two. Frankly, if the Reds are unable to acquire any other catchers, sign me up for having Tyler Stevenson up this year. The Reds, one of their top prospects, former first round draft pick who had a dynamite year in Double A this year, killed the ball in the Arizona Fall League. He's very close to being ready. I know catchers come along a little slower, but if it's me, I start thinking about Tyler Stevenson, who hit 285 in Chattanooga, 353 in the Arizona Fall League. He's just a he's almost ready. And if the Reds are unable to really upgrade, I don't know that I don't just give him a chance and see if he can play his way into a job. Let him split time with Tucker Barnhart for a little while, and you still have Casale if. As a backup option with the Reds' injury problems last year, they needed about seven or eight catchers. So,
No kidding. Yeah, last year especially. Yep.
So anyway, the Reds are kind of on the clock now, right?
Yeah, it feels that way, and it's exciting and scary too as well because we kind of all expect that all the chips are going to be at least a lot of the chips are going to be cashed for this season. It feels the timing feels right in a lot of ways, especially with as strong as the pitch or at least the starting pitching has been overall. So, here we go. We're on. Yeah.
As Reds fans, it's been a frustrating run that they've been on, and the statements made by Reds management and all the kind of feeling you get from reports around the league are that the Reds are going to be very active. Dick Williams, Reds president of baseball operations, said as much. The playoffs is where we're hoping for. We got to get good enough to be in the playoffs. And so this first you take this first hit in the offseason, and all of a sudden the initial reaction is to feel like, here we go again. The Reds are not going to be able to get it done. But I don't think we need to. I want to encourage people not to feel that way because we can't say that the Reds didn't get Yasmani Grandal because they didn't try to get him. And, and there's still plenty of chips. There's still plenty of ways they can upgrade. So, let's remain hopeful. I think there's plenty of reason to remain hopeful. But I want to ask you something because it's something I saw a lot on Twitter and I did comment on it. And I just want to briefly talk about it, get your thoughts on it.
What is Twitter? Can you explain this to me?
It's the worst. It's the worst. It's the worst website on earth. That's the way I would describe it.
But, yeah, got it.
when the Reds weren't able to get Grandal, a bunch of people came out and said, 4 years, $73 million. That's way too much money. I wouldn't pay that. To which my response is, if you want good players, you have to pay for them. 4 years and $73 million was the market rate for Yasmani Grandal. Now, I'm not saying the Reds didn't get him because they weren't willing to pay. I don't know if that's the case at all, and I'm not willing to say that. But what is this desire that so many Reds fans seem to have for every player the Reds don't get? That's too much money. The Reds can't spend that much money. Why is that still a thing?
I think it's, and I hear you talk about that a lot in the show. And, I guess my question back to you, I wonder if this happens. I don't know if you happen to go around and check out some other teams' podcasts or broadcasts or talk radio, but I wonder in other markets, not like New York or L.A., but like, Pittsburgh or, even Atlanta, which I guess Atlanta is a pretty big city now. But, do they have these same conversations about their players and money and stuff like that? Or is it specifically a Midwest Cincinnati thing? I mean, I think that's probably a part of it. Yeah. The Cincinnati aspect of it, just growing up here, this is kind of the way we, very working class town, we're both grow up here. So I'm assuming you grew up here your whole life too, right, Chad?
In the vicinity. Yes. Yeah. So,
So, Cincinnati's, kind of got that thing about it, but, it is a weird thing. It is like, why are we worried about like that kind of thing too, as well. The baseball, no matter what team, I don't think anybody's really hurting for money overall. It doesn't seem that way,
No.
So I know I always keep hearing, you hear the doom and gloom stories about the demise of baseball, but then the contracts keep getting more. So it's like that just doesn't add up. So, hopefully that's something. And it feels like this new front office, I feel pretty – I mean, last year, if you would have told me, 3 or 4 months before the season started, that they would have made some of the moves they even made for last year,
right,
I would have been really, really, like, I'd have been, no way. And so I think they're really going to try to do some stuff, but you're right. The problem is that the pickings aren't quite as healthy as they were last year. So, you know, we'll see what they do. I mean, who knows? They may, you know, surprise us all and go make a huge splash, which will be awesome if that happens.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, they're going to be trying to be active on the trade market. I think, yeah, probably some of it is Cincinnati. Just we've been beaten down for, you know, three decades, essentially, in every sport. And, you know, so Reds fans sort of have that perspective, I guess, and of the perennial losers. But and also for, you know, the better part of three decades, Reds management has tried really hard to convince the buying public that they're poor, that they can't afford to compete. And my thoughts are just, look, again, I want to make sure I say that I'm not saying the Reds did not try to make an offer. I have reason to believe that I can't say exactly what it is, but I have reason to believe that the Reds really did try to make an aggressive offer for Yasmani Grandal.
Sure.
So I'm not alleging that, but, you know, I just think that there's this need to believe that the Reds don't have money. And if they can't play on the same playing field as other major league teams, I'm not sure why we as fans should care about them, you know, because they're telling us they can't compete. I don't think that's the case. And so I don't understand why fans continue to say that. Now, to your point about other podcasts and websites, things like that, that's an interesting thought. I always think that question when in the middle of the season, everybody's complaining about whoever the Reds' third base coach is. Oh, we've got the worst third base coach in the league.
And
I think to myself every time, every team is saying that about their third base coach. You know,
because
they watch them every day. Every team's fan base just watches their third base coach get guys thrown out at home. So anyway, I think it's probably, not just Cincinnati. That's a very good point.
Sure, definitely. Yeah, the money issues, though, about that, though, I don't know if that's more that is indicative of the area that, you know, that we're from and stuff like that. So, but you know, we still go out, you know, and still, no matter what, that everybody comes out still. They maybe complain about it a little bit, but they still come out and, you know, support the team overall. And I think, you know, what was it last year? There was an uptick last year in terms of attendance, I believe. I think heard that from you and some other people too as well. And, you know, one thing too as well is it's the Reds have, you know, what was 2000, when do we have Sen Choo Choo? Was that what, 2013? Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they did put some chips on the table that year. Unfortunately, it didn't go the way we all wanted it to, but it's not like they didn't try that little run, that little 2009, 2010 to 2014 run. They tried to really compete pretty hard, and they were, you know, out of those 4 or 5 years, they were in the playoff, what, 3 out of the 5 years in that time. And so, you know, and again, yes, I know we didn't get past the first round. I was unfortunately at those games where, you know, they didn't, we were up, what, 2-0, needed to win one more to San Francisco and just couldn't pull that third one out. And, but they did, you know, baseball's, you know, you always say yourself, it's like, all you got to do is get there and then anybody can win, as we know. So they did get there, you know, those years. It's unfortunately the cards didn't kind of fall in their favor, you know?
Yeah, you got to get into the tournament to win it. But as the Nationals showed us this year, if you get in the postseason, you can make something happen. So now, before we move on to the other Reds news of the week, there's something I want to ask you about that I was going to do later, but you just reminded me, and I wanted to do it now. You did the national anthem at a Reds game this year.
Oh, yeah, that was surreal. It's still surreal. Even when you say that, you saying those words, it's like, I did? You
know? It's fantastic.
Thank you so much. It was, you know, I mean, that was definitely, of course, a bucket list thing, and it was just really just, you know, everybody that works for the Reds organization, you know, no matter what we talk about, you know, in terms of what they're doing with the team itself, but just this, the actual organization, the Cincinnati Reds family there, they're just, the way they run that show down there is top notch. And,
yes.
And yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, it was really something special. My mom, who doesn't get out, she has a little bit more trouble getting around nowadays. She even made it down there for it, which was really, it was her first time down at Great. I mean, she obviously back in the day used to go to Synergy and Riverfront Stadium, but had never been to Great American Ballpark before. So she made it out for that. And it was pretty surreal. And oh my gosh, talk about being nervous. You know, like I've never rehearsed. So Sammy and I, who did the national anthem with me, we've where, you know, you never rehearse so much for something that lasts about 45 seconds or whatever it is, you know, because there's no do-overs, you know, it's like one shot and that's it. So, but thank you for bringing that up. And it was really special. And I can never thank the Reds and everybody down there enough for letting us come down there and do that day.
Yeah. Fantastic. I was like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Why they let him on the field? What's that all about?
The best was when we were leaving, Sammy and I were still kind of in our outfits, you know, I'm, you know, looking a little crazy like we do. And, this lady, it was really nice. She stopped us. We're leaving the ballpark after the game. It was a killer game too, by the way. That was the game that Aquino kind of started. We started noticing that guy. That was, I think if it wasn't his first home run, it was within the first two or three.
Yeah.
And this lady, she's like, I really like the way you guys did it. You did it very respectfully. Like, and so, which was very nice. But I think, you know, when you see someone looking like me, you're like, now what's this guy going to get up here and do with this? But, you know, it was really nice that they recognized that too as well. So it was great.
Well, that's fantastic. And something you said is something I've mentioned in print and here on the podcast a few times that I think, because we tend to complain about the product that's been on the field the last few years, I don't want people to forget the Reds baseball operations department has been a mess for most of the last, you know, half century. I think it's in a good shape right now with the guys that are running it, but it's been a mess. But every other part of this organization is absolutely first class. You know,
it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. They really, everything other than just the baseball operations lately, has everything about the organization is completely different than it has been for most of my adult life, frankly. And they just, I have a lot of respect for the way they work in the community and the way they just treat people, mostly. So anyway,
and you can tell, and the people that have been there, like, you know, I have my radio show on WNKU, for a while, and, Aaron Sharp, who's one of the scoreboard operators, was the GM of WNKU. And he's been, I think, 15, 20 years with the Reds now. And he couldn't love it more. And everybody, when you go down there, as I'm sure you've met, you know, gone down there, you know, up in the booth and stuff, there's a very happy and positive vibe up there. There's no, like, nobody seems jaded and like, oh, I'm just kind of going through the motions with my job. They feel very excited about every, just like, they almost seem like fans up there, like working all the stuff, which is really cool to see, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that doesn't really get said enough because we don't see it on the field, and the on-field product is not being good, but it's absolutely true. So the other news this week, and not a lot of other important news necessarily, but the Reds did make a trade in the wake of the Reds had to name the players they're protecting. They had to add some guys to the 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. We'll talk about that in a moment. But on the eve of that, the Reds traded with the Tampa Bay Rays. They traded Cash and a player to be named later for Jose De Leon, right-handed pitcher for Tampa Bay. He's going to be 27 this year. He's a former top prospect. I mean, like a legit super prospect. And then Tommy John surgery, and the jury's kind of still out on him, and the Rays weren't going to protect him. So the Reds saw an opportunity for a guy that they might maybe a little bit of a rehab type guy, but that maybe the new pitching staff, the new pitching coordinators can all work on. So Jose De Leon, really interesting guy. Don't have a whole lot to say about him. I know that you're probably like me. You've not seen him play much other than just what we've read about him, but everything I read makes me think it's a good guy to take a chance on.
Yeah, and Reds have a pretty good, you know, especially over the last couple of years, they have a pretty good track record with that kind of picking that kind of stuff out too as well. So, and you know, you can never have enough pitching too as well, especially if you're going through a long season, especially if, hopefully, knock on wood, we get to the postseason too as well. So I think always having more potential arms is always a positive thing, you know, to start off with.
Yeah, I mean, you get him for cheap, basically, and if he doesn't work out well, you're not out much, and if he does, well, then you've found a diamond in the rough. The reason I like Jose De Leon, I got to say, we've been talking about Twitter, and I just happened to, I was looking on there at some responses to my tweets earlier, and I saw that Jose De Leon followed me on Twitter today.
Well, there you go.
See, you know, so that's
a wrap.
That's
yeah.
My guy right there now. He's my new favorite.
Right. So,
if I can just get Freakbase to follow me, it'll be make my life.
We'll get there someday.
Yeah. One of these days, yeah. I wouldn't follow me, believe me.
See the Joker a couple more times, and then we'll talk. Yeah.
Well, I would like to do that. We talked about the Rule 5 draft. The Reds had to add some guys to the 40-man roster to protect them. The Rule 5 draft, essentially, if you've been in the minor leagues a certain number of years, you got to be added to the 40-man roster, or any team can come along, and they have this draft where they can draft you off another team's roster. And the rules, of course, are that you have to, if you draft someone in the Rule 5 draft, you have to keep them on your Major League roster the entire season. Not a whole lot of guys, that doesn't apply to a whole lot of guys. The last impact player the Reds kind of acquired in the Rule 5 draft, actually the Chicago Cubs acquired Josh Hamilton and then traded him to the Reds afterwards. But he was a Rule 5 guy, and the Reds kept, that was his rookie year when with Cincinnati, he had to stay on the roster all year. So this year the Reds added Tyler Stevenson, the catcher I just talked about, Tony Santillan, who did not have a very good year this year, but is one of the better pitching prospects in the organization. And then a couple guys that surprised me, Ryan Hendricks, who, you know, sort of a top 15-ish type prospect, but really good numbers. He made it all the way up to Chattanooga this year, ERA under 2 each of the last two seasons. And
wow.
And then T.J. Antone, who, frankly, I know very little about him, but looks like a sort of a live arm that throws ground balls, which is important at Great American Ballpark, and the Reds protected him. So I don't know if there's much to say about that, but just I thought we should at least mention it. Tyler Stevenson, can we go back to him? Are you as high on Tyler Stevenson as I am?
Yeah, I mean, it looks exciting, you know, and I like the idea you say bringing him up, you know, well, you know, I'm sure he'll be up for spring training, obviously, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. He's going to be invited to camp with the Major League team, which is probably the first time he's been in big league camp. So that'll be big.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. The last news, sort of news of note to Cincinnati Reds fans this week is the new Hall of Fame ballot came out, and three former Reds are on there. Now, would you vote for all three of these former Reds for the National Baseball Hall of Fame? Scott Rolen, Adam Dunn, and Paul Konerko.
Wow. Well, definitely Scott Rolen. I think he's, I don't know if he's a first rounder, but I would, you know, I think, you know, with what he did, obviously, with especially with St. Louis, and even, you know, some of the stuff he did in Philly, too, as well. I would vote for all three of them because I'm a Reds fan, but,
exactly.
You know, but, I don't know if I'm the best judge, you know, Adam Dunn's the interesting one. I mean, do you think he's got a shot for the actual Hall of Fame?
I don't. I think he's probably going to end up being, on the Fred McGriff All-Stars for most home runs, without making it, he's got 400 plus home runs. I mean, 462 home runs in his career. I mean, that's crazy. 462. But he's got that .237 batting average. So,
That's
probably going to keep him out, but, he's in the Hall of Very Good, and he's in the Hall of, he's a Hall of Famer in our hearts.
Yeah.
So there you go. Scott Rolen is an interesting case. Most people, I don't know. You ask people, they think, Scott Rolen, you know, I think he's absolutely a Hall of Famer. He's not an inner circle type guy, kind of like you were saying, but
sure.
But man, people don't realize how good he is, number one, and then how few third basemen are actually in the Hall of Fame. So amongst third basemen in history, he ranks pretty highly. And I wrote about this probably 5-6 years ago at the Hardball Times. I think he doesn't get enough credit. So I think you're right. I would hope he gets at least some support this year, but
And those St. Louis years, I mean, obviously, you know, there were a lot of other players on that roster he was on too, but I used to like bum out when he used to come up the bat because he was so clutch all the time when he was with St. Louis. I mean, it was like every time he was one of those players that you would say, what, didn't he just bat like three batters ago? Because he just had that thing where you just used to dread when he would come up for when we would play St. Louis. And just because he was such a threat, and obviously a defensive threat just as much too as well. So, yeah, I mean, he seems like the whole package to me. And, I mean, that year, I thought that was one of the coolest. I remember that, what was that, 2009 when he came over here? And 2010. Okay, yeah. In mid-season, right? It was mid-season 2010. And everybody was like, you know, what are they doing, you know, trading for someone like that? And to me, that was just I was so excited when that happened because I was a huge fan. I mean, even that I didn't like to see him bat when we faced him, I just knew what he could bring to the team, and it just seemed like perfect match, and it was great to obviously you saw what he did, especially that first half of that 2011 season. You know, really it was something special.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's a guy. They traded Edwin Encarnacion for him, who's one of my favorite players at the time.
That's right, because he was in Toronto. Rolen was in Toronto then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. But, and I was like, no, I like Edwin, but then again, you think, well, this is a guy. This is an all-star third baseman who was on the back end of his career, but still a very good player. And so,
sure,
he certainly helped. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to name the five returning guys that were on the ballot last year who had the five highest vote totals last year. And I want you to tell me yes or no whether you think any of these guys should be Hall of Famers. Okay.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I'll go in order. The highest.
Don't at me on Twitter now after this, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. The highest returner on the ballot from last year, he got 61% of the vote, essentially. Curt Schilling. Yes or no?
I'm not real crazy about him as a person, but I would actually have to say yes.
Yeah, I think probably that anyone that's looking at it in terms of his baseball ability probably says that, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those where you're like, you know, even just the baseball stuff, you're like, yeah, I think he's probably a Hall of Famer, but it's not slam dunk. Second with 59.5% of the vote last year, Roger Clemens.
That's even more. it gets more controversial for each one.
Yeah, you wait till the next one.
Oh my gosh! All right, was it Barry Bonds or something?
It is Barry Bonds. 59.5%.
Oh gosh, come on.
And those guys are controversial for the same reason, obviously.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I would say yes as well. You know. Yeah. I mean, it may make you throw faster or heal quicker, and we know what we're talking about, but it's still, there's still so much skill involved with what they did, no matter, I don't care how many, what you're, you know, juicing yourself up with there too, as well. So I would say yes. Yeah.
I absolutely vote for both of those guys. But of course, my position has long been that I think performance enhancing drugs should be mandatory in baseball.
Right.
I'm not sure that's a good position to take, but that's where I am. And so that's one, two, three. Number four was Larry Walker, 55% last year. You got to get 75%.
So three was Bonds. Is that what you're saying, right?
Yes, three was Bonds.
Well, just I didn't really fully answer, but with him, actually, of those top three, actually, for him, I would feel the strongest that, yeah, a big yes on him. Like, no doubter. I mean, that guy had, I don't care. Yeah, maybe he could hit the ball farther, or he got a couple more extra years out of it. But he was a Hall of Famer when he was, you know, still weighed $125 or whatever it was. Yeah,
he'd retired before he took his first performance enhancing drug, he's probably a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah.
Larry Walker at 54.6%.
Not sure about that one. Yeah.
He's sort of the hall of guys that when he was playing, I thought he was really good. I never really felt like he was a Hall of Famer. But then you look at his stats and you're like, well, no, you know, he can make the case for him. So yeah, he's sort of a tweener there.
Yeah.
I like him. I probably would vote for him, I think, but you know, I can be talked out of it as well. The last one I wanted to ask you about, Omar Vizquel, got 43% last year. Omar Vizquel, Cleveland shortstop. So we were
Yeah. Did he play Seattle one in the tail end of his career?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, okay, got it. Because of course I always think of Cleveland
like everybody else does. Yeah.
Yeah. I would think so. Yeah. I would think he's probably, if you had to probably name at least the top 10 shortstops, probably if you like, you know, lightning round type thing, at least for me, in terms of like who I would come to mind, like the best shortstops ever, he would definitely be in the top 10, maybe even a little higher than that. So I would think so. Yeah.
I think it depends on how much you value defense. Obviously he was an elite defender.
Sure.
And you know, if you look at it, like we're rewarding the greatest players, in the game at whatever they do best, then he's got to be in that conversation. I probably don't vote for him, but that's only because I think Jose Iglesias is the best shortstop ever.
So does most of Cincinnati. So there you go.
Anyway. So there you go. That's the Hall of Fame discussion. We're going to answer a few viewer mail questions. You okay with that?
I'm ready.
Before we do that, I want to get you to tell me a little bit and tell our listeners a little bit about what you got going on here on November 29th.
Yeah. Well, so we don't, you know, we're on the road quite a bit anymore. And so don't play in Cincinnati a whole lot anymore, usually two or three times a year at the most. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been having this the day after Thanksgiving. It seems like a lot of people are in town, you know, that don't necessarily live here anymore. So we kind of chose that day, which is, you know, again, so the day after, so we call it Funksgiving. And kind of take our show and kind of, you know, turn it up a few notches, partially because we're playing at home, which is always an exciting thing. Get to sleep on our own bed and not at a Motel 6 somewhere in Montana or something like that. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really special show this year. We're really excited. We got a lot of really cool things planned out. I'm gonna break a little news here right on your show and tell you one of the things that I'm really excited about this year is my 14-year-old daughter is going to come up and perform a song with us on stage. Yeah. So super excited about that. Sammy Garrett, you know, who I did the national anthem with me, she's touring with me all the time. She's flying in from New York that morning. So she'll be here with us as she is with most of our shows anymore. And, it should be a really special show. We're hoping we came pretty close to selling it out last year. So we're hoping that, you know, that might be the case this year. Southgate's, if you haven't been to Southgate, it's a really cool place to see a show. It's a like a 100-year-old church that they turned into a music venue. It's got, you know, the stained glass windows still, the pipe organs in the back of the room behind the bar. And it's a really neat, there's multiple things going on too. We're playing in kind of the bigger room there, but there's these kind of side rooms where they'll have more like jazz acts and more alt rock acts as well. So it's kind of like an all encompassing kind of building to be in. And yeah, so, and it's all ages too, as well. So anybody listening, whether you are a kid or you have kids or whatever the case may be, it's, you know, come one, come all. So that's next Friday again, November 29th at Southgate House, which is on 6th Street in Newport, Kentucky.
Nice. Absolutely. Listen, Nation, go out there and show up and support our buddy Freak Bass. Please do. And if you get a chance, tell him that you heard about it here. But also, you know, his daughter's going to be there. Be on your best behavior, please. Come on.
right. she's going to be, I'm more nervous for her than I am even about our show, but she's going to be great. She's been practicing a lot. We got something pretty cool planned out. We have a lot of other really cool surprises that night too, as well. That are going to happen at the show that night too, as well. So if you ever want to come catch out a show, this would be the one to be at for sure.
Outstanding. I encourage everyone to go. Now let's answer some viewer mail questions. As always, these are actual letters from actual viewers. These come from patreon.com/redlegradio, where you can support the podcast if you wish. Join our community over there. We're having a good time. First question comes from Joe Farsing. His question are, who are your favorite bassists?
Favorite bassists.
I bet you've got some thoughts on this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I would say I'll try to keep it. I mean, there's a million of them I love out there. Jaco Pastorius was the first one I thought of when I saw that question. Not sure. I'm sure most of your listeners know who he is, but if you don't, there's a great, I think it's still on Netflix, but there's an amazing documentary done by Robert Tarullo, who's the bass player for Metallica, did this amazing documentary on Jaco Pastorius. He's basically he's the one that basically made the electric bass like acceptable in the jazz community. It was, you know, the jazz was more kind of thought of, you know, if you play jazz, you're going to be more of an upright player. Jaco took the electric bass literally to a whole nother level. It's unbelievable story. His and just an unbelievable player. He's almost kind of like the Michael, like every bass player, if you're a bass player, it's kind of like the Michael Jordan thing. You go through your, I want to be Jaco phase. Right. You know, when I was probably about 12 or 13 years old, I thought I was going to be the next Jaco for a while. So everybody does that. So Jaco, and then of course, Bootsy right here from Cincinnati, Ohio too, as well. Paul McCartney, who is very underestimated as a bass player. You know, he's such an iconic songwriter and front person, and obviously from the most, you know, famous band of all time. But everybody forgets how darn good of a bass player he is, and his bass lines are, you know, they're such iconic bass lines of all time. And probably have to be in the top five is Larry Graham. Larry Graham's the gentleman that he was from Sly and the Family Stone. He had his own band called Graham Central Station. Larry's the one that invented the style, thumping and plucking. A lot of people call it slap bass, which I do not like that term, by the way. It sounds very unmusical to me, but it's right. It's a common thing. But Larry's the one that invented that style. So, which is, you know, everybody from Flea to myself to a million bass players out there, you do that style, that use that style. And he's the guy that invented that whole thing too, as well, in a very cool way. So there's my top four or five.
Outstanding. Let me tell you who my favorite bass player is. Freak Bass. Number one, man.
That $100 bill is coming at you here in just a few minutes.
I was thinking about it, you know, and McCartney was the guy that came to my mind, actually. And I know that everyone's expecting me to stay on brand and say Stefan Lessard from Dave Matthews Band, but
I love Stefan too, and he's actually a friend too, so he's great dude.
Well, I've been watching him since he was, you know, 17 years old, basically. That's sort of my hashtag brand here, but no, I'm going to go with Freak Bass. Next question comes from Rich Thompson. Rich asks, in the Big 50, Cincinnati Reds, the Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. I like that book, by the way. You've chronicled. I'm shameless. Listen, I'm shameless.
No, that's all right. That's what you got to do.
That's right. You've chronicled many marquee players in Reds history. Now, if you could build your all-time team from players who were in their prime while with the Reds for one game, who would be on it? Now, he has his list, and we may talk about that in a moment, but a lot of them are going to probably be similar to our list. So an all-time team from players in their prime with the Reds for just one game, you had to have them. Let's run through these because we'll probably agree on a lot of them. Catcher?
I'm sure we're going to agree on this one. There's really only one choice for this, Johnny Bench, right?
Oh, well, I was going to say Dan Bilardello. Okay, I'll go with Bench, though. You're right, yeah.
All right, there you go.
First base, Rich says Votto. Yeah.
Votto for me, too, as well.
Yeah.
Especially if you're putting together a team like we're probably going to be putting together here, to have him play with those, that lineup would just be to see what he could. Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, it'd be pretty special. Yeah,
it would. And I know some people are going to say, well, Tony Perez is a Hall of Famer. Yeah, Tony Perez is a great player. But come on, Joey Votto, one game, give me Joey Votto in his prime. Second base, another easy one, right?
Yeah, Joe Morgan, of course.
Joe Morgan, second base, easy. Third base.
I'm choosing maybe a little controversial. I don't know, but I'm going to have to say you got to have him in there somewhere. My opinion is the mighty, mighty, the old hit king, pitcher Pete Rose.
Yeah, you know, Rich suggested Tony Perez there, which is a reasonable choice. I might suggest Wayne Krenchicki, but I think probably I'm going with you kind of need to slide him in there somewhere. Again, another guy, whatever you think about him, you know, he's one of the greats in this organization.
Yeah.
And you could slide him in any number of positions, and I think that's probably the easiest place to put him in there.
And if you're talking about them like each one of these people in their prime, yeah, too, with not only just his playing ability, but just in terms of his leadership ability, in terms of the team, you know, what he would do in terms of getting inside the other players' heads and everything like that, too, that's a guy you're going to want on your team for sure.
Well, no question. And, you know, listen, we're talking about in his prime, he was the most valuable player, you know,
right.
So you got to put him in there. Now, outfield, let's go with left field, center field, right field. Left field, Rich suggests George Foster. For one game like this, and this is my heart speaking a little more, I'm going to go with Adam Dunn. You know,
I thought about Adam Dunn for the same reason that I was saying about Rose, not to compare Dunn to Rose, but in terms of like to have him on a team of these many greats, just to see with that much protection around him, just where all he has to do is go out and hit home runs, which is what he would do. It would be, you know, he could cause some damage, you know, if you're down there too as well.
Yeah, George Foster's a good choice as well. You know, I'm okay with that, and you know, we're leaning towards more recent guys, probably because we weren't alive in the earlier part of the century, but you know, you can make arguments for any of those. Center field.
Real quick, my left field was Eric Davis.
Oh, you're going to put Eric Davis in left field?
Yes, because my center fielder's got to be, we're talking prime now, would have to be Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, okay.
Right? We're not talking Reds. We're not talking about when he was on the Reds. We're talking prime, right?
Right. If you're talking about his all-time prime, it's got to be. Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah. That's interesting. I like moving Davis up because he did play left field.
I even looked it up on baseball stats in 90, obviously, the year. He played left field almost as much as he did center field that year.
Yeah, and because when they moved Hatcher into center field, they moved Davis over to left, and that's where he got hurt when he lacerated his kidney in the World Series. I was thinking you were going to go something like Ed Rausch, the Hall of Fame center fielder from the 1919 Reds. But
he was up there, but...
Yeah. Right field.
Dave Parker. Again, we're talking prime. We're not talking when he was on the – although he was still pretty darn good when he was on the Reds, but like you're talking prime, right?
I'll tell you who I'm going here, though. Frank Robinson.
Oh, wow.
I think so.
That's a deal breaker right there. Forgot about that. Yeah.
Robinson. It's just a shame that people do kind of forget about. We all kind of forget about Robinson, like he was an Oriole, not a Red, but he was so good. Starting pitcher.
Jose Rio for me.
Yeah, give me Rio. I think. You know, you can make arguments for Yul Blackwell and a number of guys. Rich Thompson here suggests Tom Seaver. You know, you can make an argument certainly there.
Sure.
I think you make an argument for Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, of course. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you can make an argument for, you know, Tim Adelman probably, but let's go with Rio. Relievers. I like what Rich did with this.
I just chose one for this. Like, I didn't choose multiples. And I'm going to say, and again, we're talking prime, which is the big, big key. But to if you had that lineup that we're talking about right now, yours or mine, I'd love it to see Chapman out there, actually.
Yeah. Well, in terms, certainly probably the best closer in his prime in Reds history. But I'm going to go with the Nasty Boys, all three. Randy Myers, sure. Rob Dibble, and Norm Charlton. So anyway, that's a fun little exercise. Thanks for the question, Rich. That's always fun. Nathan Connor asks, and this has become a little bit of a running gag here on our questions from Patreon. And this week, Nathan asks us, special freak base edition of ball player or musician, Donald Duck Dunn or Adam Dunn? Who do you take?
Oh my gosh, what a great one. I mean, Don, you know, we were talking about the best bass players ever. I mean, Donald Duck Dunn was one of the ones. Him and James Jamerson are both kind of the cornerstones of, you know, solid and melodic groove playing. And
Booker T and the MGs, right?
Booker T and the MGs, you got it, exactly. Yep, and obviously, and the Blues Brothers band too. Remember, he was in that band too.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, which were almost all the stat. You know, that was the Stax record label, which was kind of like Memphis's version of Motown, a little bit more edgier than Motown, obviously. But so he was kind of from that camp too, as well. So, yeah, that's amazing too. And just, you know, like both him and Jamerson, they were. Just in terms of the consistency, just like Adam Dunn with his consistency of hitting 40 home runs every year. So there's some crossover there. I see how I kind of did that.
I do see that. But who do you go? Who do you pick? You got to pick one.
Oh my gosh, I'm a bass player, dude. I gotta go with Donald Duck Dunn. You know, yeah.
Well,
go with what brought you here, you know.
Well, and you know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with Adam Dunn. So,
well, there you go. But, well, he's the best Twitter emoji ever that you happen to possess.
That's true. He is my longtime Twitter emoji. Nathan also asks, and I think we can kind of dispense with this one pretty quickly. Although it's a good question, but Nathan asks, are there any players around the league that became Rule 5 eligible Wednesday night that are of particular interest to you, given roster scarcity and the push to be competitive? I personally don't see this as a season where the team would carry a Rule 5 player all year, but maybe you see it differently. No, I think this is a year where it's going to have to be somebody really good to take a chance on carrying somebody on the roster all year, because those roster spots are going to be valuable for a team that's really trying to make a push this year. So I don't see it. But then, do you remember on the 1990 Reds, they had a Rule 5 guy that they kept there all year? Some people don't remember this. They, on the last World Championship team, Tim Liana, the relief pitcher, was a Rule 5 guy, and they had to keep him all year. And was pretty good that year. So if we could get Tim Liana, the next Tim Liana, that'd be great.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Hooper Powell asks, one question for me and one for you. He says, the first one was, I'm not sure I understand your question, Hooper. Most prized possession, probably a book. I don't know what that means. My most prized possession is, I don't know, my microphone. Is that what a podcaster is supposed to say?
Right.
For the musician of the group, what's your favorite bass line in a song? Would Tom Sawyer be in your top five?
Tom Sawyer would be definitely in my top 20. I don't know about top five. That is definitely I was going to mention Geddy Lee as one of the bass. I was a huge Rush fan too, as well as I'm known as a funk guy, but I went through my major Rush period too growing up. But probably favorite bass line. If I had to choose one, I would have to say Papa Was a Rolling Stone by the Temptations. It's three notes. That's the beauty of it. I just love it. It's just, you know, three notes that plays, you know, the uncut non-single version, 10 minutes long, and the bass line doesn't change the entire time. And it's one of the most hooky and melodic, memorable bass lines of all time, in my opinion, and one of the greatest songs of all time too, as well.
I kind of love this. You know, you've been on this podcast a number of times, and we always go dig deep into the Reds, which we have today as well. But because you're a huge Reds fan, but this is more music talk than we've had before. I like it. It's good.
All right, good.
Also, I got to tell you, you know, you mentioned your daughter. For last Christmas, bought my daughter a bass guitar. I mean, she'd been playing acoustic electric. She loves playing anything with strings. But
sure,
she said she wanted to bass the guitar this year, so she'd been playing it. And now she and her little buddies have a little band, and she ended up being the bass player. So
she will always have a. There's a funny music store joke. The bass player comes in for his or her first lesson to the music teacher, and the next week shows up, and they don't show up for their lesson, and the music teacher calls them up and like. where are you at? You're on your second lesson. Where are you at? She's like, I got a gig.
That's so right.
When you're a bass player, you will always be able to work. So tell her she made the right career choice.
She's been, I don't know that it's a career choice, but she loves guitar and she played guitar forever and she's written a bunch of songs, but it was never in a band until she started playing the bass. So there may be something to that.
Well, there you go. See? Yeah.
So last question for viewer mail. Joe Farsing asks, Freddie Galvis and JVM, I'm going to assume he means Josh Van Meter, not Johnny Vandermeer. Freddie Galvis and JVM for Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Who says no?
I mentioned to you this off air. It seems like Mike Trout always makes his way onto your show some kind of trade or trade possibility. I'll let you answer that one.
Yeah,
Chad.
Another dumb running gag that I inexplicably love every single time. So, I think the Reds probably say no to that. How are you going to give up Josh Van Meter? That left hand swing,
right.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
So. Yep.
All right. Last viewer mail question. This one came from Twitter. Actually, got one more. Hash Brown viewer mail. Craig at Craig 54771493. Okay. Why is everyone mad that the Reds couldn't afford Grandal when everyone knows they are trading for Mookie Betts and signing Anthony Rendon? See, that's the voice of reason.
I like it.
Bring it on.
Maybe
I'm just talking myself into this, but I really think there's a not insignificant chance that the Reds pull a deal like one for Mookie Betts. I really, it's kind of the sense I'm getting, and again, it may just be me in my head trying to convince myself that things are going to be good finally for the first time ever, but I could really see that happening, and hey, that'd be fun, right?
Yeah, and I think I think you guys were talking about it. It was maybe you and Doug in a show or two ago, but when winning starts, if they do, everybody's like, okay, well, you're going to put, give away all your prospects and then, to get this person or give away all your money to get this person. I think winning, and we see it in all team in baseball, once that winning kind of streak kind of hits on a team, even if you lose this one particular player the following year or whatever, the culture just kind of changes. And there's at least for a few years that winning culture kind of carries on over a few years. So I think just if they would, of course, 2020, we want to win the World Series like we do every year. But I think if they did do a big splash like that, and even if it is for a short term, whether it is just for this season or two seasons or whatever, I think that's going to bleed over into, other things, into the future, like down the line. And it seems like they really, the front office kind of has that kind of it just feels like both Duke Williams and Nick Kroll both kind of have that kind of sense the way going all the way to them investing in the coaches. I know they got rid of the hitting coach this year, but they tried, and obviously with the pitching thing leading all the way down to the minor leagues all the way up, it feels the culture to me just feels different. I think we brought some kind of big name players in last year too as well, which got everybody excited, which was part of it, but it feels just like it's the overall culture. I think that's kind of why, I think a big reason why this attendance has been going up. People are feeling that the organization feels a little bit different now, and we're kind of looking forward in a different way that we haven't before.
Yeah, hopefully they've hit that inflection point where it's coming back around, and you're again, Don't mortgage the future. Don't sell all your whatever. I want to win. Okay, they're either assets in that they're going to help us on the field. Which how long has it been since we had any kind of contribution from anyone coming from the minor leagues, other than Nick Senzel this past year? It's not like we have a bunch of guys coming through the organization. So they can help us either by on the field someday maybe, or they can help us by being an asset that we can trade for somebody that's going to help us on the field. So, yeah.
I wanted to ask you a quick Twitter question for myself. We'll just pretend I wrote it to you on Twitter. What do you think, if you had, looking at our whole lineup, especially our starting eight lineup, of every, and I can't wait to hear what your answer is, what of everybody that's currently, that's probably going to be the starter for next season? Like, I know there's a couple unknowns because we don't know who we're going to trade, but like the ones we know, who do you think is the what's the word I'm looking for, the give me that they're going to have at least as good of a season as they did last year and or better season? Like who can you, like, if you had to put your money on one player on our current roster, you're like, oh, I know this person, either one hasn't peaked out or he's going to do just as good as much as he did last year, which player would that be on the current Reds lineup?
Framing it that way, I think the absolute lead pipe cinch lock of the year is that Nick Senzel is going to be much better than he was last year. I think it's a 100, presuming he's healthy, which is a big presumption, but I think that to me is it's an absolute guarantee. He fooled with his stance a little bit last year, and I'm told that he's back to his, he's going back to his old stance, and which he was successful with, and you know he has most of a year under his belt in the big league, so he's you know he's kind of a veteran now. I think he's an absolute guarantee to be much better than he was last year, and that helps. That helps the Reds' offense. Who would you say?
Got it. Mine actually is Suarez.
Yeah, yeah.
I still don't think he's peaked yet. I still think he's still got more to show us. And every year you and I were talking about him maybe one of the first times I was on here 2 or 3 years ago. And he was kind of under the radar then a little bit. And it just seems like every year he's not just making tiny steps. He's kind of making these big steps, you know, and he's about as consistent as you can get. And he's the one, if I had to put my money on this year, he would be the one I would definitely put it on. I mean, Senzel too, and I see all the points on that because he has a high ceiling to go to as well. But I think Suarez I still think he hasn't reached his ceiling yet.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a possibility he has reached his ceiling, but we may see that kind of a year for the next 2-3 years. I mean,
right, at least where he was last year for sure.
I don't think a lot of people are gonna say he's gonna regress. I know I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, he's
no
boy, I love that guy too. Isn't he fun to watch?
Oh, he's the best signing they've had. I mean, he's just so good for the team. There's so many reasons. Seems like I haven't met him. I don't know if you have, but he seems like a really, really genuine, good guy too as well.
Yeah, just a joy. So, all right. Well, now we got to get to the most important conversation here before we put wraps on this thing. We're close to the end. And to give some context here, over the years, Freak Base and I've had a little bit of a back and forth about comic book movies, and because I watch all the comic book movies, but I don't really love very many of them at all. I enjoy them, and I literally see every one that comes out. For a while it was because my son wanted to see all of them, but mostly it's because they're fun. And so we've not always agreed on what was great and what wasn't. But then Joker came out, and I think we absolutely agree on that, right? You were blown away by Joker.
So much so. I mean, we're talking about a lock in terms of what person's going to do. I'll be shocked if Joaquin Phoenix doesn't get nominated, and I won't be surprised at all if he doesn't win for Best Actor this year too as well. I mean, his performance is just so amazing, and the way that they, in such a cool, tasteful way, tied it into the Batman mythos was great. Like, they didn't beat you over the head with it, but at the same time, though, I thought, from what I was hearing about it before I actually saw it, I thought they were going to go almost so much the opposite direction, where it was like Joker name only. Like, they weren't going to really, with the exception of Yays and Gotham, and that's about it. But they still, I really paid, I don't want to give any spoilers out on your show, but they did really pay homage to the whole story of Batman and the way that Joker kind of ties into it, but just in such a unique an incredible way, and not with no CGI. Like, as much as I love superhero movies, I am not a fan of CGI most of the time, just because it just, no matter how great it is and how much money they spend on it, it still always looks two dimensional to me, no matter how good it is, with the exception of maybe Thanos from Endgame, which was, I thought was a pretty amazing feat. But generally, I'm not even the big budget Marvel movies, most of the time, I like the storylines a lot, but a lot of the special effects I'm not crazy about. But yeah, this one just knocked me out. And there was a Hollywood Reporter yesterday, which is usually pretty, it's not too bloggy. I mean, it's usually pretty accurate. There's a rumor that they're actually going to do a sequel. And of course, my artsy movie side at first, I was like, no, don't do a sequel, you'll ruin it. But then part of me is like, with the movie like that, Godfather 2 wasn't too shabby, so we'll wait and see. There are some people that are saying that rumors, but yeah, I just loved it so much. Even though I am a superhero guy, I'm from the Christopher Nolan side of, Dark Knight, the early Tim Burton movies of Batman. I still like more of the semi-realistic, semi-dark side of stuff. And of course, Joker does this about as, takes that to the 10th degree too as well. So you did like it then, I take it then.
Yeah, I mean, this was a comic book movie, but this was not a comic book movie. This was a movie. I mean, it was, you know, I rate all my movies on a 5-star scale. It's the only movie I think in 2019 that I've seen so far that I gave that I've given 5 stars to.
Wow!
And there's a couple still out there that I want to see that I haven't seen yet. But yeah, Phoenix was incredible. In terms of a sequel, yeah, my first thought is no. But yeah, on the other hand, I wouldn't mind spending a little bit more time in this world because it wasn't a. I mean, I expect Thanos to get nominated for Best Actor too, but there are no Thanoses in this one, and there's no. You know, flying around. And it's a Batman story, but it's not a Batman story. You know, I mean, It's clearly a Batman story in terms of, like you said, they set it in that universe and gave those nods to it, but. It's just a story about a guy that's struggling, and here's how he gets where he went. And the reason I loved it a lot of people thought this was a little bit too much of beating us over the head, but Todd Phillips directed the movie, and clearly It was an homage to Martin Scorsese, one of my favorite directors, obviously one of everyone's favorite directors. Taxi Driver, De Niro actually shows up in Joker, but.
And King of Comedy, of course, too, as well.
And King of Comedy, absolutely. So, so you can, you can see those influences from Scorsese in that. Now, my question for you before we finish here, this is a question that my son has asked me a couple times because I think he's struggling with the answer to this when he goes back and forth. Joaquin Phoenix, the best Joker portrayal ever?
Oh, that's such a tough one, obviously, you know, because when you bring Heath Ledger into the equation, it makes it super tough because somebody that already has won the Oscar for playing the part of Joker, which would be wild if he does win the Oscar for, you're going to have two people playing the same role, you know, at winning that too as well. I won't say that, but I will say something that I thought was kind of interesting. Somebody said that Heath Ledger's version of Joker made Jack Nicholson's version of Joker look like Cesar Romero's version of Joker. Joaquin Phoenix's version of Joker makes Heath Ledger's version look like Jack Nicholson's version of Joker. I don't know if that makes sense,
but
that's kind of where I'm at on that. You know, I mean, I love Nicholson's version, and I love Cesar Romero's version of Joker too. I mean, he's, you know, pretty twisted in his own little way too as well. The other last thing to think about with Joker, if they do make a sequel, it'll be the first time ever in the cinematic world that Joker will be in the same actor will be playing the same role of Joker in the two movies. You know, they were originally, of course, going to try it with Heath Ledger in the third Batman movie, but obviously things didn't turn out that way. But so that's a little interesting little side note too as well. So,
well, the only sort of unfortunate point that I would make regarding that little bit of trivia is that it's a real shame that we couldn't get a second performance of Jared Leto as Joker.
Oh, yeah. We just kind of forget about him, don't we? Yeah.
Suicide Squad. Yikes.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I mean, there was a couple little – I know you probably just hated it all, from the beginning. But
I like Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she's – well, yeah, Margot Robbie's as a pretty talented actress. Well, what do you think of this real quickly, and we won't go to this rabbit hole, but what's your opinion of Ben Affleck as Batman?
I think Ben Affleck is a very good Batman. There has been. Guess he's not Batman anymore.
Right.
But I think he's fantastic. I just think he suffers from the fact that a lot of these DC movies have been garbage. I think he's fine as Batman. I like him. Yeah, you know, I think he can pull off Bruce Wayne's side of it. I think he's probably underrated because he comes after Christian Bale, who everyone, went crazy about. So I think he's probably underrated as a Batman. I like him. And I think Robert Pattinson will do a good job as Batman. But I'm not really, I'm not that invested, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's kind of what you said, too, as well. Now, I know you and I are different on this. I was a big fan of Batman versus Superman, especially the Ultimate Edition, which was almost a whole other movie from the theatrical release. Justice League was just awful and a travesty that movie happened the way it did. It would be a whole other podcast explaining all the things that went wrong with that movie. But physically and acting wise, just, I mean, when you think of Batman in the comics, I mean, Ben Affleck to me looks like, in my head, like if there was a real Bruce Wayne and there was a Batman, I mean, dude's like 6 foot, almost 6'5".
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, he looks like physically the part too as well. But I am super excited about the upcoming The Batman, which is being directed by Matt Reeves. You've got Jeffrey Wright, who I'm a huge fan of. You know, I don't, he's from Westworld playing Commissioner Gordon. Zoe Kravitz playing Catwoman. Obviously, Robert Pattinson playing Batman. So I think that's going to be a really, I'm sure it's going to be more in the Christopher Nolan side of the universe with the Batman thing. So that, I'm really looking forward to that a lot. Because everybody thinks of Pattinson, obviously, from Twilight, but if he's been in some really amazing movies since then, too, as well, like some more art house type movies.
Oh, yeah. He was in that last Safdie Brothers movie that was, I can't remember the name of it now, Good Night, I think, which was crazy good.
Yep.
So anyway, love talking to people that are passionate about things. And so you and I are one of these, we're just going to have to do a full podcast about nothing but letting you teach me about comic book movies.
I'm ready. And you can teach me about all the other movies too as well.
There you
I'm
go. Down. Yeah. Maybe we'll do that. All right. Freak Base again, November 29th, Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, Funksgiving, Southgate House Revival. I hope that we can sell the place out, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on again. We really probably ought to do this more often, because I really just get a kick out of talking Reds with you, man.
Maybe if they do that big, we'll do an emergency if they do the DDD Gregorius, or I'll do a call-in or something like that if that trade happens, or a big one like you. But the Mookie Betts trade, then they'll have to figure out a way to jump on or something. Yeah,
we'll figure out a way to get that done. Absolutely. All right. This is Red Leg Nation Radio. You know how to subscribe. Everywhere you find your podcast, we're there. You can support us, patreon.com/redlegradio if you want. You can find us at Red Leg Radio on Twitter. He's at Freakbass, FreekBass on Twitter. I'm at Dotson C. If you like us, talk about us. Tell your friends. Get those subscriber numbers up. I appreciate how much you guys are supporting us, even through the off season here. The numbers have stayed steady because we've just got the greatest group of fans. So for Freak Base and Stefan Lessard, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.